From the Professional Disc Golf Association, this is PDGA Radio News.
How's your hyzer hanging, Frisbee folk? It's the Disc Golf News for the week of September 13, 2004. I'm Brian Sullivan. Coming up this time, results from the U.S. Am Nationals in Michigan. Plus, we'll run down some of the winners of the 2004 Japan Open, which went down last weekend. If you keep coming up short of your goals at tournaments, well, maybe you need to reevaluate your tournament preparation list. Mike Worm Young shares his tourney prep tips with us in this week's 60-Second Clinic. We'll preview this weekend's Brandy Windjammer Super Tour event in Delaware. And sports psychologist Dr. Betsy Schoenfeld tells us how to handle physiological arousal. What the heck is that? Well, it's just a fancy term for I'm freaking out.
Some people get shaky hands. Some people get sweaty palms. Some people get tension in their neck or back. Other people have butterflies in their stomach. But all of that is a physiological reaction to the competitive situation.
It's PDGA Radio News, sponsored by Discovering the World at dtworld.com. Also by Discraft. You'll find them at discraft.com.
Since 1979, Discraft has designed and manufactured tournament-quality flying discs for all disc sports. Our disc golf line is second to none. From beginners to world champion pros, disc golfers everywhere rely on the quality, consistency, and durability of every Discraft Pro Golf disc. Discraft, the world leader in disc sports.
The average disc golfer's new secret weapon is the Flash Maximum Distance Driver. Available now from Discraft and your local disc golf retailer. Let's roll some results from last weekend's big events. We'll start with the Japan Open in Tokyo, where it's Avery Jenkins with a huge third round. He shoots 2 under par. He's going to win this one by a single stroke, 7 under overall, over Steve Rico and Ken Climo. They tie for second place. Brad Hammack takes fourth. Barry Schultz in sixth. Now to the women. It's Carrie Burlogger having a huge year. She wins this one by 7 over Chaiko Kakimoto. Ohio's Valerie Jenkins taking third at the Japan Open in Tokyo. Now to the U.S. Amateur Disc Golf Championships in Milford, Michigan. 17-year-old Scott Slater of Livonia, Michigan, the newest player on Team Discraft, has a world record round for the amateurs. 10.24 rating in his second round, shoots 1 under par. He is your winner after a tiebreaker against Patrick Blake. Blake takes second place from Illinois. Josh Romain of Michigan comes up in the second card in the last day to take third. Tournament director Todd White had this to say about Scott Slater's performance.
I had to pay out the bounty this year on the first under par round, and he is now the newest member of Team Discraft.
Every year there are hundreds, probably thousands, of new disc golfers. They want to get out there and they want to play a tournament right now. They want to play right now. So they get out there and suddenly it starts raining and they say to themselves, holy cow, I didn't bring any rain gear whatsoever. Well, if you happen to fall into that category, this is all about you. It's the 60-Second Clinic, and this week professional disc golfer Mike Worm Young shares his tips on how he prepares for a tournament.
Before playing a tournament, you want to make sure that you have everything that you possibly could need for the whole tournament before you even leave your house. Once you get to where you are playing your tournament, if you are not prepared, if you don't have your umbrella, if you're missing towels, if you're short on socks, if you got to go get long sleeve shirts, you don't have your Gore-Tex socks, all of these things can cause havoc in your game. Now, ways to prevent these things would be to make a list in advance before you leave the house, make sure you've got everything you need that you could possibly need, and enough money to buy extras if you need extra things. Pack light, but pack things that are needed, not extra stuff that's junky. You want just disc golf items. Remember, you're coming to play Frisbee. This isn't a beauty contest. This is all about throwing Frisbee, so anything that would help your game, bring it. Some players don't always have Gore-Tex socks. I always have a pair of Gore-Tex socks, even if they're old and wore out, because they still work better than just having your socks on. Gore-Tex is key, especially for morning rounds when the grass is real dewy, and there's lots of water on the ground, and your shoes are going to get wet regardless, just walking around in the high grass, even in the fairways. The short grass is going to get your shoes wet. So just warming up in the mornings, you could have your socks and shoes soaking wet before you even started your round. Now, if you've got Gore-Tex, yes, your shoes will be soaking wet, but your socks will be dry. You might have heavy feet from the wetness, but at least your feet are dry and you're feeling good, and you can play your round with confidence.
Mike Worm Young is a longtime professional disc golfer and a former world doubles champion. Coming up, we talk with Dr. Betsy on how to deal with tournament freakout.
Disc golfing should be inexpensive and fun. Discovering the World wants nothing more than to help you have fun. They offer a wide variety of disc golf and PDGA products. If they don't have it, you don't need it. Orders ship within 24 hours, and there's a retail location open 7 days a week to deal with you personally. Call 714-522-2202 or visit dtworld.com to see the full selection available now from Discovering the World.
Hi, this is Timmy Gill, and you're listening to PDJ Radio News.
In the big picture this week, we are pleased to welcome back Dr. Betsy Schoenfeld. She's a professor of psychology at Western Kentucky University. Hey, she's a sports psychologist, she can help you, so listen up. Our topic today, what I like to call the tournament freakout.
Dr. Betsy, great to have you back on PDGA Radio.
Thank you, Brian. It's good to be here.
Now, we have talked previously about focus, and we've talked about self-talk, and today we're going to talk about physiological arousal. Now, you are a highly trained professional. I'm just a schmo with frisbees, but it sounds to me like that means, you know, I'm kind of freaking out. Is that fairly accurate?
That would pretty much sum it up. Physiological arousal just refers to that tension, anxiety, nervousness that we experience where people experience it differently. Some people get shaky hands. Some people get sweaty palms. Some people get tension in their neck or back. Other people have butterflies in their stomach. But all of that is a physiological reaction to the situation, to the competitive situation. That's what we're talking about when we refer to physiological arousal.
Let me ask you this, if I can stop you there. Why is it when I go out for a casual round of disc golf, you know, with a couple of buddies, we're just goofing around, you know, I can shoot the lights out, I might shoot a 5 under par, and then the next weekend there is a tournament, and I end up shooting a 5 over par. What is it, how do we physically, you know, how does that happen?
Well, there could be a number of reasons to explain that, but one of them could be the fact that you feel more pressure in the highly competitive situation, and your body responds to that. And we talk about what we call the mind-body connection, that our mind and body are inextricably connected, that the body influences the mind and that the mind influences the body. So if you are in your self-talk telling yourself this is a really important competition, it may increase your level of arousal to the point that we are beyond what we would call the optimal level of arousal. We definitely want to be up for a competition, but not so up that it interferes with our performance. So we look for what we call the optimal level of arousal, which actually differs for different people. Some people want to be more calm. Others want to be a little more hyped up. But once we pass that optimal level, then it begins to interfere with our performance.
And is there a way you can discern where your optimal level is?
Well, yeah, actually, it's just a matter of knowing where you're comfortable. It's just a comfort zone. And you probably are able to tell when you feel a little bit anxious, and you know when you feel calm, cool, collected, and in control of the situation. And what we want to be able to do to be in control of the situation is learn to recognize when we are experiencing some tension or some nervousness, and then learn how to control that, relax, release the tension, and put yourself back in control. That sends an important message from your body to your mind that you are in control of the situation.
Well, I think at this point we have we've defined physiological arousal to the point where everyone pretty much understands what it is, because I think most, if not all of us, go through that at some point or another. So I guess the important question is now, how do we learn to control it?
Well, there are a couple of techniques, and actually it's a fairly straightforward process. It just takes a little bit of time, not even a whole lot of time, but there are relaxation techniques, and one of my favorites is called progressive relaxation, where you focus on certain muscle groups in the body, and you tense those, and then you relax them, and noticing the difference, the contrast between the feelings of tension and relaxation allows you to learn to recognize when you're getting tense. And there are a number of programs out there, and they all work pretty well. There is one linked to my website if people are interested in looking at that one. But essentially what it does is it takes you through each muscle group in the body, and you tense say, let's just go through one for example. If you make a fist with your hand and hold that so tight that your knuckles begin to turn white and hold that for about 15 seconds, you should notice the feelings of tension in your knuckles. Then release. And as you release, feel the feelings of relaxation as it flows through your hand. It's pretty easy to recognize the tension and then the relaxation. If you go through this progressive relaxation, it'll probably take you about 20 minutes, but most people, two or three times through it, then very quickly learn to recognize the tension and the relaxation. And what we'll find is that most people get tense in certain areas of the body. For me, it's the back of my neck. And so if I'm on the course and I need to relax, I simply do the one tense relax for the neck, and that puts me back in control.
And, okay, so there's one example, and I like that, especially the neck example that you gave, because a player can do that during an actual round where, you know, you're not going to have 20 minutes to go off on your own and control your arousal. Another example might be what?
Well, let's say, for example, that you are getting ready to putt. And it's an important shot for you, and you notice that you're getting a little bit tense. You can also use what we call the one breath relaxation, which is very slowly inhale. Just if you do that, I don't know if this will come across on the radio, but inhale and then very slowly exhale. Same thing. Now, one thing people tend to do is to slowly inhale and then exhale in one big puff. That doesn't work so well. But if you very slowly inhale, then exhale three times, it really does relax you. Then you can focus on your putt and go ahead and make the putt. One thing that we'll notice is that when we become very anxious, our focus narrows and we develop tunnel vision. It means that we lose our flexibility in terms of sorting through our thoughts and making plans and trying to determine exactly what we want to do. So a lot of times we're, in essence, blind to what's going on in our environment. Let's say, for example, you've got a hazard between you and the basket and you're focusing on the basket, but you're tense enough that you've developed this tunnel vision. You may not even see the hazard. You throw your disc exactly on the path you intended, but it hits the tree branch and you miss the putt. So in that situation, you might want to try one of the relaxation techniques. And one point that you indicated, with the progressive relaxation, it does take about 20 minutes to learn, doing that two or three times. But in practice, in competition, you wouldn't do the entire exercise. You would simply do the portion of the exercise that would be pertinent to the where you're experiencing the tension.
Aha, so this is an important point here. So what you're saying is go out, learn that relaxation technique before a round ever starts, and then you'll be able to go back to it anytime you need it and quickly figure out how to mellow yourself out.
Exactly. If someone's interested, they go to those directions, follow them. Usually it takes people two or three times is all, and you can do that at a time when you need to relax, perhaps before you're ready to go to sleep. I do advise against doing it in the car when you're driving, because it'll put you right to sleep. But, you know, practice two or three times, and then on the course, you're ready to use it. When you have a practice round, that's a good time to practice either the one breath or a segment of the progressive relaxation. Essentially, what we're trying to accomplish here is to recognize the tension and then use one of the relaxation techniques to control it, whether it's sweaty palms, trembling hands, butterflies in the stomach, or tension in the neck. We can practice the relaxation technique, meaning actually using it, and then we will put ourselves in a position where we are calm, cool, collected, and ready to play. And this results in more positive self-talk, which we've talked about previously, and enhanced confidence, and it's going to put us in a much better mindset to perform well on the golf course.
You know, in talking with you like this, it all sounds so easy until someone like me gets out on the course, and it just isn't easy anymore, but I guess it really does boil down to just practicing, you know, what we've learned here and putting it into practice in our daily rounds of golf.
Well, you're absolutely right in the sense that it is important to practice. It's like the player who's in a big moment in a game and the coach says, okay, son, this is a good time to use your mental skills. He goes, not now, coach. This is really important. you know, we really do need to practice these off the course so that when we're on the course, we're able just to bring up that tool and put it into practice. It would be virtually impossible to try and use progressive relaxation in particular if it's never been practiced at home. I think that's one of the advantages of the one breath relaxation is that it is very easy to learn and it can be used in almost any situation.
Dr. Betsy Schoenfeld, your advice to us is invaluable, and I want to thank you so much for your time that you've given us previously and, of course, today.
You're welcome, Brian. It was a pleasure to be here, as always.
Dr. Betsy Schoenfeld is a sports psychologist on staff at Western Kentucky University in Bowling Green, Kentucky. This weekend, the Big Shooters are headed to Rockland, Delaware for the Brandywind Jammer. Billiard runs this one.
I think it started in 86 with Rich Hughes, and they called it the Delaware Invites Pennsylvania because they just expanded Brandywine to 18 holes, and it's evolved from there. For a while, we called it the Windjammer, and for some reason, we never got wind that weekend, and believe me, if you're Brandywine on a regular day, you get plenty of wind. We throw this big tournament, and the big pros come out and going, yeah, nice wind. So I said, look, if we don't get wind this year, I'm going to call it next year's the Calm Jammer, you know, and see what happens. Didn't get any wind, so the next year I called it the Calm Jammer. We got a little bit of wind, but not enough to make me excited about it, so I said, well, I'm going back to the Wind Jammer. But I noticed, I think Stockton, California, I believe, they ran a tournament called the Wind Jammer. I said, well, I guess I lost that one. That thought never occurred to me. There's a sign out there on the bulletin board that says, welcome to Brandywind. An old golfer, Steve Martin, not the Arrowhead guy, but somebody else, he made it in his wood shop, and I thought, well, okay, we'll call it the Brandy Windjammer, and it evolved from that. And basically, it's a big arm, wide open course with wind management. There's not one shot that's probably level. I think maybe one shot might be level, and that's iffy. But everything is either up or down, and guys love it. It's a lot of fun to play. Well, we try to cater to the ladies. That's been our thing. They did that, I saw at Pawpaw, which is nice to see that it's being picked up. And pay out really good to the ladies. And I think Leslie Herndon won last year. She was with the Discraft crew. We ran it in the spring last year. Steve Winchester wanted to get it on the A schedule. And the only weekend that they would let us do it was Easter, which is spring, of course. And we did it then. And so Leslie came out and she won it. And see, I believe the Open Pro was our homeboy, Mike Moser. He moved here a couple years ago, much to our delight. And he's been showing us how to throw some decent golf.
Bill Yurd is tournament director for this weekend's Brandywind Jammer in Rockland, Delaware. We spoke to him at his home in the major Rockland metropolitan area. So what's up with everything else going on this weekend, September 18th and 19th? I'm here to tell you, in Topeka, it's the mighty Shunga-Nunga. And in Texas, it's the Carrollton Open. Plus, Louisville, the Kentucky All-Star Weekend. And in Reidsville, Ohio, it's the Ohio River Bear Open. Plus, the Logan, Utah Aggie Fall Classic. And in Greenville, North Carolina, it's the East Carolina University Open. In Miami this weekend, the Indian Hammocks Open. Seattle hosting the Lakewood Open. And in Chapin, South Carolina, the South Carolina Flying Disc Championships. Plus, Can-Am Cup 6. In Forestville, New York, don't forget that's a team event. And in Leadville, it's the Colorado State Championships plus the Montana State Championships in Helena. What else is going on? You can find out day or night, 24/7. PDGA.com is the place to go. And finally, we got some more stats, fresh stats as of the beginning of the month from the home office in Toronto, Canada. Here are the current tour points leaders. We'll begin with the pros, and in the open division, no surprise, Barry Schultz, 86-70. The ladies are led by Carrie Burlogger at 834 points. The Masters, it's Russell, Ron, strangely enough, not Mr. Brad Hammock. For the Women's Masters, it's Elaine King, Grandmasters Rick Vokes, Sylvia Vokes, his wife, leading the Women's Grandmasters, and your senior Grandmaster leader and current world champion, Peter Shive. Now for the AMs, for the men, it's Daryl Lambrecht. For the women, Kristen Cherry, also Bruce Brakel, Denise Kaiser, Morty Finkel, and Tony Hoyman, all leading their respective AM divisions. And finally, the juniors, it's Jamie Moser, Matt Hall, Coral Sauls, and another world champ, Valerie Miller. There are your current 2004 Tour Points leaders. And finally, if you've been listening to the show, you love disc golf, you're not yet a PDGA member, but you've been thinking about joining, maybe there's a tournament next month you want to play, well, listen up. If you join the PDGA between now and December for the first time ever, you've never been a member, then you get not only to play the rest of this year, but all of next year as well for a single year's membership dues. It's a really good deal, so think about that because, hey, it is a ton of fun. And that, my friends, is the Disc Golf News for the week of September 13th for the PDGA. I'm Brian Sullivan. Our sponsors are Discovering the World at DTWorld.com, also Discraft at Discraft.com. Get out, throw some plastic, stay out of the shul, and keep them in the fairways.